Blog Talk Radio.
Great introduction. Welcome, everyone. You found Masonic Effects, the place for Masons to idle away the time with some discussion, some thought, some argument, some debate, doing what we do best, communicating. The before Twitter, there was Freemasonry. Before Twitter, before Facebook, before it mattered, we were able to self-censor. There was only so much we would tolerate, so much of the narcissism. You and I were allowed our private moments without feeling the need to photograph everything and record it for imperativity. Isn't that an interesting phenomenon that's happened to us? But before all of that came along, before the millennials, before the baby boomers, before we named cohorts of people born within certain time frames, before that, there was Masonry. And the rootstock of Masonry was and remains to this day thoughtful men. Today we're going to talk about our commentary, I think, is just to stimulate the juices that have perhaps been allowed to settle in our minds. This is about the hindsight and confidence that is Freemasonry. So this isn't a place for idle listeners, I don't think. This is a place where you just sit back, fill your cup with your favorite beverage, wherever you are, the one that's suitable for the time of day that you listen. Settle back in a comfortable posture. Put on headphones if you want some privacy or you want me speaking directly into your brain. And enjoy the next hour with us. We're going to begin with a little bit of a focus exercise, because when we got together, when we have always brought ourselves together, it's been to have some exchange that was predictable in a way, and at the same time interesting and with some novelty. Over the years, we've burdened ourselves. I'm afraid we've burdened ourselves. If you subscribe to Great Notions, which I think you all do, Confucius rang this one out. He was around about the same time as Plato, wasn't he? Yeah. Life is really simple, but we insist on making it complicated. Confucius, I don't agree with everything he did. Like, in his philosophy of life, he put women at the very bottom. So he was wrong. He was wrong to do that. And anybody that would think that way is wrong. And in the 21st century, incredibly backward. You have no idea what you're missing without that sense of And there's no need to feel threatened by the equality and brilliance of women. Oh, a bit. I'm crossing that line that line of hypocrisy you're suggesting it. Yeah, I probably am. How can we say those types of things? For some people, but how can we kind of claim that type of thing and still be part of a fraternity? Well, that's where we need an opportunity just to explain. We're living in a very dynamic period. The dirty little secrets that have for so many decades been swept under the carpet are being revisited on us. Here in this part of the world, the stain on our conscience forever will be our history with our First Nations. Whether we have the confidence to think our way through this, get over the insult of pride, lingering colonialism or hubris that may drive us, or to stand back and realize that this is driven by notions of racism. This is very, very bitter a pill to swallow, but far less than the lives of people who have been shattered by our collective actions. So nobody takes responsibility. How does that settle with our common Masonic values? And we not only need to take responsibility, but make sure it never happens again and correct what damage has been created. And that's the right thing to do. Whether we can get there or not, I'm not too sure. I'm not trying to be cynical here this morning. I'm just trying to be frank. As Marcus Aurelius said, odd. I've got to quit quoting people with this military, you know, that have come to us from this sense of military construction of our worlds around us. They were only a small, small part of it, just as they always have been and always will. All they can do is kill. Very little is needed to make a happy life. It is all within yourself, in your way of thinking. Makes sense, Mark. Maybe you have some redeeming qualities. So I'm going to plunge on today. Here's a little something from a Norwegian philosopher, Søren Kierkegaard. Life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. Here. Pick it up with this, boys. We're getting on with the show in a moment.
On a de tout temps chanté les nuits de Paris, la plastique, Montmartre, les Halles. Dans le monde entier, on sait que là-haut, c'est beau. Oui, mais ici, on a aussi des filles jolies, des cabarets, des boîtes de nuit. Pour y chanter dans la gaieté des airs légers, j'aime les nuits de Montréal. Thank you.
Canadian girls. Canadian production, as you can tell. It's Christine Tassin and Les Imposteurs from Montreal back in October 2009. So we move on with the show. The hindsight and confidence. Can you imagine trying to live the life of another person or trying to live in another time? Try it. Right now. Try and put yourself back in the time of your great-grandfather. Be honest with yourself. Take a look around. What do you see? What do you experience? How old are you? Are you a child? Then you'd likely be suffering some way. What we call anxiety. The child wouldn't have that necessarily explanation of the inner self that came in the early part of this century, late part of the 19th century, well developed into the 20th century. It was more about survival. Are you healthy? Do your teeth ache? What about the illnesses that you're carrying? Do you have a remedy for drinking when you drink bad water? I'd think this would be before water purification. How about your friends? Are they living to be in their 70s and 80s and 90s? Only in rare instances, you'd think. Most of them are dying young. Any of your friends die from a broken leg? Are the women in childbirth? Yeah, lots of children. Dead in infancy. Young women dying in childbirth, sure. How's life look to you now? And what do you look for solace, for understanding? I'm guessing if you were at all in a part of a community, you'd feel that pressure to attend a church and worship. And it would the message be one of understanding and support and encouragement? Probably not. It would be more likely a strict repetition of the canons of faith. Live this way and you will go on to greater satisfaction after life. It will go on to the greatness of acceptance and the immortality of the soul. No explanation. Oh, and depending on your persuasion, would you even be able to follow the progress of the service that you're attending? Or was it given in Latin? Nobody mattered. It didn't matter. What mattered was more about authority. Was there such a thing as community policing? Well, there was an understanding, wasn't there? A cuff in the ear, a crack of a bat across the back. Were errors made? Yeah. And what about the colored family on the edge of town? I thought so. Different times? So we homogenize our history. You and I and everybody around us, we homogenize our history because the reality is often too bitter for us to continue. Where we begin to falter is when we forget. We forget the lessons learned so that we can avoid suffering and conflict. And whether by our own abject stupidity or indifference, if we don't learn the lessons, of course, it's not you and I that repeat. It's that pain and suffering that repeats over and over until we do learn the lesson. Now, But you would say things are much different today. Ah, yeah. Our stupidity isn't defined by a single act of commission. We're now able to do things and have done that are catching up with us. Hundreds of years of deforestation. It was back in the 18th and 19th century that Britain had been deforested and it had to be replanted. Yeah. It wasn't the pastoral kinds of scenes that we see today. It was devastated. What did we learn? We learned about graft and greed and power unaccountable. Unless power is unaccountable, or unless authority is unaccountable, it always, always goes sideways. That's a little maxim of life. So look around in your great-grandfather's time and think about the authority of the day. The difference between what it was supposed to be and what it was. Well, we'll just not say much about the clergyman that's visiting the widow women. We won't say much, or what happens with the children involved with the churches. We know. Did they get support? Maybe. More likely a cuff in the mouth and told to shut up. Who would believe them? We were good at that, weren't we? Because we didn't have a sense that anything could be done, that anything we could do would make life worse for ourselves. We never had a sense of protection, that we mattered. And the gains that were passed down to us through history, well, you're on the street back in your great-great-grandfather's time. Are you able to access the medical care that the wealthy were able to access? Really? Did your intemperance or rudeness or aggressiveness provide you with some degree of safety? Perhaps little man syndrome. Well, we often mock Napoleon for it, but probably saved as many battles and stopped as many battles as it created. Oh, history's been full of that. Use the illusion of power and ruthlessness and make your enemies fear you. Yeah. And that's all we've got from history. And that's the best that humanity has been able to do. Yeah. And were you well educated? Or did you have enough language? Could you even write? Could you write your name? Could you do math? Simple ciphers? Perhaps you were a tradesman. Perhaps the skills of the trade have been taught to you. You were lucky, huh? Unless you became injured and left your family, the women and children, destitute, starving. Oh, we can be pious. Let's enter the injuncture of the piety. Those women that worked on the streets in order to put food into their children. Well, let's condemn them to a life of utter degradation. We're good at that. Can you imagine trying to live the life of another person or trying to live in another time? We can do this in the imagination. Reconstructionists. You know those reenactors that go a little bit further, not just give us witness to old battles that seem quaint. They seem quaint until we realized that there were people dying. There's nothing quaint about that. But do I like a reenactment? Do I like the cannons going off and the flintlocks, all their noise and spark? Yeah, I do. Because it reminds me, in a good way. Oh, I don't mean the kind of reminders in the place where I'm living where everything is a monument to somebody dead. No. Bridges and streets and every tree in the parks. We herald the past in this town. We're always looking over a shoulder at the past, trying to cling to memories that have faded. Because all of that, if nothing else, I suppose, was aimed at the future, a better future, a contemplative future. So we either have divide the world into people at the battlefront and those that are not at the battlefront. There's nothing else. 7.3 billion of us. There's only those two groups. If you're not, there's an ugly little term. If you're not behind us, you're in front of us. As if stand up high and support us or we'll attack you too. Really? That's all you got? I think we're much better than that. We're much deeper. We're more thoughtful and deliberate than that. Now, point a finger at us. Where do we, you and I and the order, fit into these discussions about climate? Where? No place? Head back in sand? Where we're waiting as the ice fields melt. Oh, you might think that the concern is about the increased water level in the oceans. That will affect the Americas, certainly. The shorelines, yeah. But there will still be a shoreline. It's just going to be further up and inland than it is today. But the shorelines have over throughout the history of the world, have fluctuated. Water levels have, the salinity of the oceans. But things are coming all, not quite full circle. The chickens have come home to roost. We're waiting as the ice fields melt. The concern that we've noticed, our scientists have noticed, is that when the permafrost melts, there's going to be this release of a great deal of methane contained in that frozen organic matter. And so the question is, what's going to happen to all that methane and the CO2, a huge source of it? Well, that's not our fault. We don't have anything to do with that. We live our lives immune, indifferent to the cumulative effect of things natural and what we call unnatural. You and I are and masonry is as natural as anything else. We may be a construct of the mind in a lot of ways. Is politics natural? It happens, but I can't really tell you that it's part of nature's way. Not definitive, not. Doesn't matter whether or not we can agree about the dreams. Reconstructionists may be dreamers, but try as they may, the result is dismissive. We can try to rebuild 16th century, but all we're doing is a 21st century version of the 16th century. Do we agree about those types of things? No, obviously not. Does it matter? Yes, greatly. Particularly for the craft. What purpose does this serve? Whether thousands claim the earth is flat, it travels and reacts as if it is a globe. Duff Cooper, that's a name many of you may not have heard of. The Viscount Norwich had an effect in World War II. Does it matter whether his role is known today? He was a keen and subtle observer of human nature. The title of his first book, Old Men Forget, is a truism, not a challenge, but an observation. Unless we have an unvarnished grasp of our history, realize the importance of past events, and understand the importance to next generation, the book closes. What was learned is forgotten. Time doesn't repeat. Or does it? Each generation lives in its own time with all the advantages and challenges that life places on us. Einstein once said that time exists so that everything doesn't happen in the same moment. Are they goals of objectives of Freemasonry? Are the goals and objectives of Freemasonry dated? What were they? I've never heard that discussion. Has that been happening in your lodge? Or has that been happening over a cup of coffee in the coffee houses? You know, the street universities of the 18th century? Is that where you've had those conversations? And I missed it. Oh. And what did you conclude? What did you discover after the push and shove and back and forth? Did we have objectives? Was there an objective to Freemasonry in the beginning? It wasn't something that was planned with goals and objectives. It was a well thought out business plan. I doubt that they produced a business plan with those objectives articulated. And I doubt that they came up with a slogan. I doubt that anybody pinned the "Good Men Better" bumper sticker on the back of their wagons or outside the pub. I kind of doubt that. What were they? I have an idea. The goals were about belonging, about the greater good, but we didn't know that at the time. Remember about common purpose and a counterbalance to a lot of the wrongness that was going on in the world, a lot of the that we witnessed in the day, the confusion. We hear that the scientists are telling us that certain things about the celestial properties, but from the pulpit, we're told something else. We're told what to believe. What does a man of conscience do with that moment? What does a man of belief do with that moment? Well, history isn't kind to fools. There's more consequence to foolishness than there is to wisdom. Oh, did we... And as we go on, the consequences of our stupidity become more compelling. 188 scientists signed a letter to the American president after they had created weaponized energy, a nuclear bomb, begging that it not be used. That atrocity. That homicidal focus is with mankind forever. Anybody proud of that moment? Anybody feeling reflection that the lives didn't matter, or that we can justify, the scary part is, can we justify that much murder? Civilian life, soldiers, doesn't matter. Can we? Can you? Well, and that's a part of the brain that I think has gone dormant. When lives don't matter. When we've lost control of our reason, lost sight of the objective. In that murderous frenzy of survival, we're going to survive no matter what. What did we do send the berserkers out first, whip them into a frenzy, a bit of alcohol, pumped up so that death has less meaning than the purpose of death. Until the battle's over and you begin to try and wash the blood off and find that it's hard to wash an imagination. It's hard to wash a memory. It's hard to cleanse. It's not new. Post-traumatic stress, that's not new. It's just a new title for an old thing. Many of our great-great-grandfathers lived with that pain. Our legions were full of them. And contemporary soldiers are saying, that's not the way I want to live. I don't want to be drunk every night or every day. I don't want to be pitied. I want to be able to move forward with my life and believe that all of that sacrifice was for something important. Not to live in fear, not to create more damage, not to carry on with this pathetic exercise of power. The beaten women, the frightened children. Canaries in the coal mine, aren't they? Is that worth it? No. No. It's not right, but it happens. Just like a lot of things in about us as an order. It's not right, but it happens. We need to be able to at least learn about it without quaking in our boats. Are the goals and objectives of Freemasonry dated? I don't think an order changes the nature of a man. I think intelligent men, thoughtful men, can identify one another in a crowd. The fools are always in the crowd. They're fairly easy to avoid, except when there's too many of them. And then it becomes dangerous, doesn't it? Of course it does. The mob. The mob mentality. We do not like knowing the things that we've studied and found. We do not like that when we put men and women in uniform and arm them and train them. And then we find out what they do when they're in packs out on the streets. Policing. Now we're looking into one of the most remarkable multifaceted mirrors. Our great-great-grandfathers would just marvel at this, as you and I probably should. All the indiscretions, being caught forever, being filmed, being recorded. Now, you and I know that everything that we do is on record in our conscience. We were doing this. Don't be getting into a vapor about this. Settle down. We were doing this long before technology came along, letting every lout and every thoughtless person do it. We were encouraging conscience. Have a conscience. Act according to your conscience. Use your common sense. Well, for the deranged and stupid, that meant very little. And it still does. But it doesn't mean an uneducated man cannot understand and have an appetite for meaning in his life. That's, to think that is just conceited. To think that the only people that can achieve greatness are the well-educated, well-healed, is the ultimate conceit. The things that are coming, we have inherited the foolishness of generations gone. How are we going to pasteurize that part of our history? How did we let a few percent of our population accumulate the wealth at the expense of so much poverty? How did we ever let that happen? That wasn't done by design. It is what it is. It's on us now. Well, the boys of the 17th and 18th and 19th century, the imperialists, they faded into the background. We still have a few despots and a few dangerous critters running around, armed. Always, always. Conflict, well, you know, better that the, quote, greatest nation on earth has a military budget just a little shy of $600 billion. Annual than to feed and educate their children. Wow. Strange times. So who's going to fix this? How are we? Is there anything that can be done? Well, that's just the way it is. Where in the world did, what part of masonry did that, where was that buried? Events repeat themselves. Time plunges on. Oh, if we know a little bit of physics, you may have a sense that there's debate and discussion about that, but I'm not part of that. I'm part of the audience just listening and trying to piece it together and trying to understand what does Einstein explain? What did he explain to us? He explained to us that he was a man, and that very few people could understand relatively. Just because we can't quite understand it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But when we start to understand things, we begin to measure them, and then they exist. A friend of mine the other day was talking to me about, I brought up something about the CERN Hadron Collider, you know? And I was amazed at the findings. And just it's something that puzzles me about the work trying to piece together in my own thinking what this big effort is about. I don't like being in the stands without a clue. I like to at least have whatever understanding I can achieve so that I can make sense of what's happening in front of me. Sort of like if I go to a cricket match, it's like some of it I get, some of it, oof, I need some friends that grew up with this stuff as boys. But his comment was, this is an absolute waste of money. It serves no purpose. It doesn't make any sense. All that money is wasted. And I don't know what shocked me more. I was that somebody that I considered a friend would think that way, you know, or that I wasn't prepared for it. What's the importance of understanding how things work? Well, we should stop at only the things we can see. So all this work in breaking atoms up and trying to understand the behaviors of the parts of those atoms, well, that doesn't matter because we can't see it. Well, we can't exactly see a bacteriological effects in my bloodstream, but we can trace it. Oh, but we created some tools that allow us to see it. In the 21st century, we've created some tools that allow us to measure properties that are very deep in taking us back into the beginnings to understand how things work. Well, there's no, that doesn't produce wealth, does it? So if it doesn't produce wealth or income, there's no purpose to it. Really? Is the mirror getting a little darker now, the one that you're looking at? Art doesn't produce wealth when we sell it. When greed takes over, hubris, that's not what I'm talking about here. Art, that shared experience the artist is trying to convey, or to shock, to contribute in some way to our experience, so that you and I, in our own mind, make that connection. Is that the playwright? Is it the sculptor? The painter? The poet? The musician? But let's pull back for a moment, hey? Who's going to fix this? The stream has always been very deep. And masonry has been a rally point. Oh, we're still, I think, ridiculously consumed with hero worship and celebrity. Oh, do you know the list of all of these people that were Masons? I'll tell them to you, and somehow that's going to convince you that I'm swell because I've been accepted by the same group that accepted them. How daft is that? I am who I am. They are who they are. I like to think that John Wayne, underneath all of that makeup and bravado, was a reasonable, decent human man, human being. That's my connection. It's not what he did for me, it's what I did for him. What you and I and all of us did for him. We accepted him, the exception, ancient and accepted. So what we gave him was very old and very important. Now, do we walk around saying, oh me, oh my, I'm too old to be able to handle all of the conflict going on. It's just a terrible, let me get my little hands flapping here. It's just terrible. I want to put my head in the sand. And I didn't create global warming. Don't blame me. I'm not going to do anything, so it's nothing to do with me. Well, let me whisper this into your ear. Yeah, we all contributed. Knowingly, actively, we contributed, and we still are. Here's a little observation. We're not going to make these changes actively or politically. No, we're not capable of that. Humanity is, but the individuals aren't. This will happen by force, but by an irrefutable force that we can't defend. It is coming. And no, don't get off your, this isn't fire and brimstone. Get real. This is consequence. It's coming. And if we're so stupid that we can't believe the proofs around us, that really is not the kind of definition that Freemasonry deserves. So take off your apron and keep carrying on with that kind of thinking, but please don't drag masonry into it. Well, the Mason thinks that there's no such thing as global warming. Must be true if he's saying it. The Mason thinks that, you know, he never made any contribution to poverty around us. So if he says it, it must be true. The truth be known, on the day of reckoning, that's just us understanding our conscience and reflecting on it. These things don't change us. What's important is for good men to keep some balance for all of the way that the media is making money. And what do they use to make money? They sell to the lowest common denominator. This is the bear pit at the festival, the fall festival, where we let the hunting dogs attack and tear a wild creature, a defenseless creature, apart. Bloodlust, yeah. And either we sell tickets or we place money and bets. It's entertainment. Or we let two of our youngest, strongest men attack one another. The violence sells, doesn't it? And the salacious nature of life, the dirtiness, Do you remember the days when you were so young and stupid and inexperienced that you couldn't hear the word breast without giggling? Breast of chicken. She said breast. Do you remember that? There are men that still, grown men, that still are triggered like that. Are we just repeating our own childhood? Or are we trying to find, in the world around us, we're trying to find people just like us? I tend to think that Freemasonry had to do more with, symbolically, a balance for all that the media shovels at us, the decline of human nature. How low can it go? What's the next startling monstrosity that can be created? All of that aside, there's a lot of very beautiful and wonderful things happening in the world around us. If we're encouraged, and we encourage our children to look for the worst in people, then inevitably they will find it. And that doesn't reinforce that we were right. It reinforces our particular bias. Freemasonry is the counterpoint. What is the counterpoint for all this mayhem? To sit back and try and understand what it is that's going on. To step back when other people aren't capable. Freemasonry teaches you that something that we're audacious. Oh, the world, the rabble, are taught that if somebody has done something to slight us or to hurt our pride, then we are justified in unleashing the fury to do whatever we feel is necessary because we can justify it. Or are you? Follow the universal laws. The golden rule. Oh, that's a bad, bad pain, isn't it? We just want to go out and hurt somebody. When you don't react, even though it's justified, that's Masonic. When you reserve your judgment, yeah, you could. When you're being mocked, you're a fool for not retaliating. Then you're acting Masonic. If you understand the principles supporting your actions. So do you live a principled life? You may or may not. But that depends on your capacity to explain. And that depends on whether you've given it a bit of thought, or you've done a bit of study, or you've talked to other men who have done a bit of study or given it a bit of thought to hear what they have to say. Not to replace your own ideas with theirs. Freemasonry doesn't do that. Never says you're just a blank screen and everything that we say is gospel. That's like just you dragging the pulpit into a lodge. Where the hell did that come from? You do your own thinking. If you and I don't have an original thought, then we don't have an original thought. Freemasonry is about responsibility and accountability to yourself, to your creator, to one another, and doing the right thing. Ethics. Even when the right thing isn't clear, we pay a price. So global warming, is that the fault? Well, come on, we're not that bright enough to figure out that it's all to blame. Let's drag every ounce of oil and natural gas out of the ground and burn it. And let's see what happens with all that stuff in the air. Well, I can't see all that stuff in the air. And those scientists, well, they're just, you know, they're lying. Greenhouse gas, that's just made up. Except Masons are encouraged to study the arts and sciences. not because anybody compels us. It's more like saying, study that and see what you find. Become a student of the arts. And then tell us what's changed in your world, if anything. Study the sciences, and then tell us this: what is the goal? What are the objectives of Freemasonry? Study that stuff first. Go beyond superstition. Even the ritual makes this stuff clear. We're never told, man, you know, we're told something glib like, oh, we're going to have a wonderful journey. Wonderful journey, Mike. We're cracking the books. The wonder is what you bring. Are you that curious? Do you need to know? It doesn't matter what it is. It's you. It's you. Be proud of it. Be pleased with it. But do it well. And be honest with yourself. The results, they'll be known to us. There's something about the ritual that I recall that has to do with working very hard so that we don't, it's your job. We're going to let you into these secrets and mysteries, but don't let us down. We want to know that with you, we haven't made a mistake. But we only know that by seeing your performance. So do you make a contribution? Do you live an ethical and meaningful life? Well, if you don't know what all that stuff is about, welcome to the human race. We weren't born knowing this stuff. We're striving. But we can't stop. We can certainly stop mocking people for their efforts, deriding them, putting up barriers, trying to say something that increases the braying in the room. Gets that uncomfortable laughter, that uncomfortable, thoughtless laughter at some misogyny or homophobia or prejudice. You know what I mean. And that's not about color. It's about human condition. Here's what I wonder. Are the goals and objectives of Freemasonry dated, or does each generation of Masons relearn, accept, and repeat the validation of timeless knowledge? So, do we post-date it? Never did it that way. I mean, that's just myopic, hey? Short-sightedness edits. And it's most ridiculous. Oh, but don't say that because, you know, people have with puffed chests and a sense of rank don't agree with you. Ignorance is bliss, eh, gentlemen? Can you believe that? Or does each generation, as I suggest, that you and I and all of our ancient brethren before us began to be exposed to these ideas that we had to relearn. We're not necessarily born knowing them. So we have to rediscover, reevaluate, and make those connections in our own lives. And for ourselves, when we begin to accept the facts, some based on belief. There's a belief that science is accurate. And there's an understanding of what accuracy is in science. So if you're pointing fingers and mocking these terms, really, that's all we've got. The mockery is left behind. It's left on the shop floor. And what happens is we find our feet firmly on the ground and much more confident in our beliefs. Not so true and ready to combat and argue and produce conflict, but to use what we understand, our insights, that keen insight, to improve the decisions that we make, to show some insight and foresight. So I'll leave you with that question. Are they dated? All right, we're frozen in time, reconstructionists, right? We're just trying to live according to this belief structure, gentrified. Remember, 18th century, lots of social distinction and social strata, wealth, the gentry, royalty, all of that. And then the unwashed masses down here, lots of illiteracy, separated from lots of privilege. The Baroque, the Rococo, privilege. And even to this day, sadly, we see poverty being blamed on the poor. Wow. Wow. What a world. What a world. And this lame, oh, Jeremy, this lame reasoning. We don't have enough food to feed everybody. Really? That's all you got? Do the math. If that's your supposition, your math is wrong. You are absolutely right. You've got the sun shining out your orifices, brother. But your math is flawed. Well, I have an opinion, and it's legitimate. And yes, you do, and it's flawed. So here, we'll throw a stick out in the pond. You can go out and chase that around. That's the adults in the room have more importance, because even when we come to these understandings, and even when we accept it, and we begin to validate that timeless knowledge, we have to turn toward our future and face the level of problems that are on us today. We're not dealing with problems of the 17th, 18th, 19th century. Masonry is facing the reality of the 21st and 22nd century. Where the hell are we going? How the hell are we going to get there? So you wonder, we've not been able to explain ourselves why new Masons are putting a foot in the door and then fleeing, because they're told some, you know, the explanation for hundreds of years, thousands of years of philosophy is so thoughtless. Well, that's not what we're here about. We're straighten your tie and we're just going to have a giggle. We're going to have a laugh, and we like this. We don't want to, you know, and we're going to praise the bad work. And if somebody is, you know, hasn't been able to recite four lines since they were boys, let's not be too critical about them, and let's not expect them to be doing their best. Let's just expect them to stand up. Really? And you're going to base a complete, you're going to define the function and purpose of our old ancient order on that kind of expectation. So any kind of work by the entered apprentice is accepted. Yeah? Man, we've got a lot of work to do. Here's a little Ray Charles and Gladys Knight. You were there. You're here.
Baby, I'm sorry that I took so long to grow, but there's so much about myself I didn't know. I guess I must have let you down a million times or more. But through all those hungry years, when I couldn't find the tears, you were there.
That's one of the points of Masonry too. To mark the occasion that you were present and you matter. Now you go and do the work. There's a little something to chew on before we go. We have to wrap this up today. This is a writer that I find just remarkable, Tobias Churton. You've heard me speak about his work before. What do you think about this, brother? Freemasonry has been handed down for much of its history by word of mouth and in the spirit of hallowed custom. While everything encompassed by oral tradition, the tradition remained alive, spiritually vital. However, when some things came to be written down, and Masonic orthodoxies entered the scene, constitution, ritual, after the 1720s. The disparity between authority and evolving tradition has left many members with the feeling that there must be more to it. I'll be honest with you, I've felt that. I felt that within months of being an entered apprentice, I was fascinated. But when I realized that the people that were the leaders, people with rank, were essentially uninformed, Masonically illiterate, it was a disappointment. Freemasonry was inauthentic, wasn't it? But Churton tells us where this feeling generated had to do with the separation, the disparities between authority and that evolving tradition. The evolving tradition is what I'm talking to you about here, brethren, the part that you and I have performed in that evolution. The hallowed custom, the information that's given as it is sacred, not secret. A dispassionate observer, granting that he or she was a well-informed observer of symbols and mythology, should have little difficulty in finding meaning and tradition behind many of the features to be encountered within a lodge. Absolutely. If the people there were inauthentic, was that all there was? Not if you just start to look around the lodge and discover or realize that these symbols are pouring out important parts of history and philosophy silently, waiting for you, the observer, to discover and to ask, to probe, to be curious. The observer would not necessarily ascribe these meanings to Masonry, to understand the workings of symbols. Well, that's not Masonic. That's a human trait. And mythology, well, that's not Masonic. That's a human trait too. But we're looking at myths associated with Masonry. So the observer would not necessarily say that was because of, you know, all these meanings are ascribed to Masonry. Struck by the variety of features derived from other disciplines, how do we compare this? He or she might conclude that if these objects had not simply arrived together at random, then a process of syncretism was at work. He's saying here there's some pull, some force pulled these ideas together. Syncretistic order is one made out of separate elements brought together from distinct contexts into a new framework. Got your attention, didn't I? The observer might have to try and work out what this relatively new framework really portended. Asking individual Freemasons might not always be very helpful. To give you one example, Churton attended a third degree in Staffordshire, and there was some commotion before the start of the ceremony as to where the volume should be opened before it's rested on a little lectern near to the master's chair. Every Mason knows that the three great lights of Masonry, as they're called, you know what they are. You would think then that every Mason would understand why this is so and what every great light was there for. But these fellows knew that the one of them, the volume, had to be there, but at which page? As he was the only guest in the lodge present on the occasion, it was haphazard that I might be of some service, and suggested John's Gospel, chapter 1, verse 1, would be a suitable place to open the volume, especially for the third degree. In the beginning, blah, blah, blah was the word. Freemasons have long speculated that the real meaning of the master's word in Freemasonry, or even the legend of the lost word of Freemasonry, as in fact, was the creative word or wisdom of God that became flesh, as John tells us, and was slain and raised. This idea is quite explicit in the ancient and accepted 18th rite known as the Rose Croix. My suggestion was greeted with incomprehension combined with not a little anxious suspicion. Surely I was told John's Gospel was from the New Testament and therefore specifically Christian. Freemasonry was universal, was it not? So it was decided to open the volume somewhere in the Old Testament on the basis, curious as it was, that the collection of sacred law was more universal, or at least more Masonic, on account of the story of Solomon's temple being included within its pages. And that the third degree contained a legend of a slain master who is prepared to die rather than reveal his word or secrets to the unworthy. and that does not itself occur in the Old Testament. Cut no ice with these particular brethren. And so the Bible, which included the New Testament, was duly opened in that part of it known as the Hebrew Scriptures, of universal significance, doubtless to Christians and Jews. Are you smiling yet? Kind of ironic, isn't it? There was no doubt that transgression was the latter part of the sacred law book, could only be sanctioned by due authority from above, and was as though the only half the original story had ever been washed to the shore of this particular lodge. The result was people doing things, but not really knowing why. Of course, in time after repetition of the semi-mindful act, a new meaning appears with which members are more or less comfortable while remaining more or less ignorant. This kind of confusion is endemic in the craft. Can we assuage its contagion by taking an objective itinerary of lodge furniture? Sounds simple enough. There you go, off on that nice discussion. I hope we've provided some ideas and injected a bit of the reality of masonry and the tasks that we face. We're not doing this alone. Masonry is not the product of one mind. It's a product of all of the members throughout time. And that confusion that you sense, it's real. And that doubt that you have, yeah. Is that all there is? That's a valid point. To understand the answer to that question means to do a little bit of probing, a little bit of background work. Answer the questions. Nothing will compel a man to do this. Nothing except his own curiosity. Nobody could assign this work to you and me. Nobody. It doesn't make any sense. But if it makes sense to us, and what we discover does not mean that we're going to be out there trying to convert the world. These lodges with their beliefs, if they're repeated long enough, even though they're wrong, people will begin to perpetuate the ignorance behind them. But would I go into a lodge and point a finger at everybody and say that? No. That would be incredibly ill-mannered. That would be insulting, and nobody deserves that. I shake my head. But you and I have a right to be thoughtless, except not Masons. We have a higher level of expectation placed on us that you and I have agreed to accept. And we require patience to get there. I look forward to you joining us next week. This is the 269th day of the year, 25th of September. We're plunging into autumn. It's only lasts until the 22nd of December we've got a leap year this year, don't we? Yes. Let's see where we are on the 22nd of December, whether we can remember back to this day. 2016. There's only 97 days left in this year. And you and I are getting better at what we do. Here's a little Stefan Grappelli and Yehudi Menuhin. It's called Autumn Leaves. I know. I couldn't resist. Thanks for joining us. Look forward to having you back real soon.